The Royal Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Vallee, beginning its 10th calendar year on the air.
Everybody, this is Rudy Vallee and Company. Tonight we begin our 10th year in the air by welcoming to our audience a host of new listeners throughout Canada, the Dominion-wide radio audience of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, where 34 stations have joined our network. With Canada just joining in tonight, it is particularly appropriate that our company this week should include two internationally famous Britishers, Dame Sybil Thorndike, one of the most celebrated actresses in the English-speaking theater, and J.B. Priestley, novelist and playwright whose drama Time and the Conways opened in New York this week with Dame Sybil in the lead role. You will hear a scene from the play this evening with most of the New York cast, including another London player of considerable prominence, Miss Jessica Tandy, and Mr. Priestley will be interviewed later on in the program. Our company includes as well Senora Elsie Houston, whose excitingly novel Brazilian voodoo songs have never before been heard in the air, Sugarfoot and Sassafras, minstrel comedy team, and, of course, the perennial Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou. Next Wednesday, I begin my part in Gold Diggers in Paris for Warner Brothers. My last bottom was Sweet Music. Maybe you will remember some of these lovely songs from my last effort before the camera. A medley of songs from Sweet Music. During the course of the past 5 years, we have presented on this stage just about every conceivable brand, level, and type of comedy. I say just about because we have missed one traditional type of clowning, the old-time blackface minstrel act. We remedy that oversight this evening by introducing Sugarfoot and Sassafras minstrels. Sugarfoot is Bob Paget, brother of Pat Paget of Pickin' Pat, and Sassafras is Johnny Welch, both veterans of the burnt cork trade. This is their first network appearance as a team. Sugarfoot and Sassafras.
Lord, have mercy. Lord, ain't you glad to be here? Oh, play it, man, play it. Hey, Sugarfoot, that's pretty. What in the world's the name of that song?
Boy, that was the hamburger song from Kitchenetta.
now, what do you mean the hamburger song from Kitchenetta?
Oh, sweet mysteries of life. Yeah.
But you know, there's something I want to ask you. Sugarfoot, did you go see that dentist that I told you to go see about when you told me you wanted to go see about a dentist? Did you go see him?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I see him all right.
Well, what did he say when you told him that you knowed me?
Cash, please.
Yeah. No, I mean, what did he say when he put you down in the chair?
Oh, gas, please.
Gas, please?
Uh-huh.
Well, what did you tell him when he said, did you want gas, please?
I said, yeah, and you better look at my oil, too.
Man, what is... You gone to town.
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy, look at that. Oh, ain't that pretty. Well, what's the name of that song?
That's the new Stein song.
Now, what do you mean, the new Stein song?
By Bill, Mr. Shane.
Boy, you say a little crazy. But look, yeah, here's something I want to ask you. Is you going to insist on playing that thing? Oh, man, that's pretty and all them other songs put together. Now, tell me, what's the name of that one?
Sassafras, that's the lightning bug song.
The lightning bug song?
Yeah, you keep glowing your way and I keep glowing my way.
Boy, you get crazy every day you live, you know that. Oh, ain't that pretty? You certainly know lots of songs. Now, what's the name of that one?
That was a Scotch football song.
Now, what's the Scotch football song?
Get that quarterback.
Lord, man. Now, wait a minute. Cut out that foolishness for a minute. I really do want to ask you a question.
Well, go ahead and ask me.
Sugarfoot, I heard that your brother Pat was up in Saratoga and won $50 on the horse races. Is there any truth in it?
Yeah, it's true, all right.
It is, huh?
Yeah, only it wasn't Saratoga, it was New York.
New York.
And it wasn't $50, it was $5.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't win, he lost it. And it wasn't Pat at all, it was me.
Well, look here, before you play any more on that thing, where in the world was you going this morning about 9:30 in such a great big hurry?
Well, I was going down to the hardware store to get me a hammer and a screwdriver.
A hammer and screwdriver?
Uh-huh.
Well, what was you going to do with a hammer and screwdriver?
Well, you see, winter time is here, and I got to take all the screens down so the flies can get out.
Wait a minute, boy. Huh? If you go insist on playing that thing, why don't you give me that old imitation of that old 20th Century Limited pulling out of the Grand Central Station along about 3 o'clock in the morning with Mr. Rudy Valley on board headed for the great sunny California? Now, I'll tell you what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Just put in 2 shovels full of coal and come out of the roundhouse right easy.
Oh, you mean just let him ooze out?
Yeah, just ooze him right on out.
Oh, yeah, here he comes.
Bring him on out the roundhouse. Yeah, that's it. Now, be careful now. Now, you're coming out on the main line. Now, I tell you what you do. Just put in just a little more coal. Look out, man. You'll jump the track before you get started. Now you're going.
Exhaust? Some more exhaust.
To keep on, we'll all be exhausted.
I ain't got no smoke.
Oh, man, get to California.
Bronx. Wow, boy, that's good. Leavenworth, change clothes.
Don't stop here. Keep on going.
To Denver.
Boy, get across the mountain. Oh, now you're going.
You get that cow off the track.
Get him off the track.
Phew, never mind.
Go ahead now and get to California. Oh, man, that's misery in my bones. Now, pull him around the bend. That's it. Goodbye, folks. We're gone to California.
Last night, a young lady named Alice Alexander made her debut as a producer. She is to be commended on a fine, brightly colored, fast-moving musical book show called Right This Way, with my old friend Joe E. Lewis in the cast. The lovely Tamara and the capable Guy Robertson sing this exquisite composition, one of the loveliest in years. I can dream, can't I? I'm locked in the bend of your embrace. For dreams are just like wine, and I am filled with mine. I'm aware my heart is a sad affair. There's much disillusion there. But I can dream, can't I? Can't I adore you, although we are oceans apart? I can't make you open your heart, but I can dream, can't I? Or two that concerns fathers and mothers.
What's the most important course in a meal? Ask a boy that question, and he'll probably say,
dessert's best of all.
And ask about favorite desserts. The one he's sure to mention is
royal gelatin. Gee, that's a dandy dessert, especially royal strawberry gelatin. Why, it tastes like big, juicy strawberries. And Mother says it's good for me, too.
Yes, royal gelatin is a marvelous dessert for children as well as grown-ups. And it's no wonder royal strawberry gelatin tastes like strawberries, for it's made with the flavor of real strawberries. Every single package of this delicious dessert contains the flavor of from 30 to 40 luscious, juicy Klondike strawberries, never with any artificial flavoring. And Royal combines this delicious flavor with grade A gelatin, gelatin that's wholesome, odorless, pure, gelatin that costs almost twice as much as inferior grades. Yet, because so many millions of people are turning to Royal, we are able to give you this delicious gelatin dessert for only about a penny a dish. Give your family a special treat of delicious gelatin that's made with the flavor of real strawberries. Buy three packages of delicious Royal strawberry gelatin tomorrow. And for real fruit flavor, be sure to get real royal gelatin. That's royal, R-O-Y-A-L. Tonight at the Astor Theater, Mr. Darrell Zanuck and Miss Alice Faye will be present at the premiere of Mr. Zanuck's greatest effort to date in Old Chicago, having seen some of the miles of sets of Old Chicago streets in the 20th century lot. I predict that the picture is going to be more than has been publicized, and that Miss Faye is going to be commended for a fine portrayal. From the musical score is this song, I'll Never Let You Cry. I'll never let you cry over me. You'll never know how nice I can be. I'll never tell you how much I'm in love. You'll never know who I'm thinking of. I'll never let you stand in the rain. I'll never keep you waiting in vain. I'll never bring a tear to your eye. I'll never let you cry. Presenting now, for the special benefit of our new Canadian listeners, an all-English cast headed by the illustrious Dame Sybil Thorndike in a scene from Time and the Conways by J.B. Priestley. Time and the Conways, which opened here in town on Monday evening, which has been running in London since early fall, considers the effect of time's passage on the members of a middle-class English family and offers a startling theory concerning the nature of time itself. An idea with which readers of Mr. Priestley are already perhaps familiar. And incidentally, an idea to which we are unable to do full justice in this short scene, being compelled to resort to a rather clumsy radio device in order to compress Mr. Priestley's subtly complex handling of the time idea into the space available. We do believe, however, that your close attention will be amply rewarded. And so we present Dame Sybil Thorndike, Jessica Tandy, Mary Jones, Godfrey Kenton, and Christopher Quest in Time and the Conways. Time, the present. Scene, the living room of the Conway family home in a provincial English city. The fortunes of the Conways are at a low ebb. The widowed and elderly Mrs. Conway, played by Dame Sybil Thorndike, has called a family conference to consider ways and means. As our curtain rises, Kay Conway, a newspaper woman, played by Jessica Tandy, is alone in the room. Arlen, her favorite brother, played by Godfrey Kenton, enters.
Well, Kay.
Arlen.
I'm glad you could come. It was the only thing about this business that didn't make me hate the thought of it. The chance you might be able to come. But Mother says you're not staying the night.
I can't, Alan. I must get back to London tonight.
Work?
Yes, I have to go to Southampton in the morning to write a nice little piece about the newest little film star.
Are you writing another novel?
No, my dear, I'm not. I tell myself too many people are writing novels.
The last time you wrote, Kay, I mean to me, you sounded rather unhappy, I thought.
I was. I suppose that's why I suddenly remembered you and wrote. Not very flattering to you, is it?
In a way it is, you know. Yes, Kay, I take that as a compliment. Why were you so unhappy then, the last time you wrote?
Something that was always ending really did come to an end just then. It had lasted 10 years, off and on. and eating more of one's life away when it was off than when it was on. He was married. There were children. It was the usual nasty muddle. Alan, you don't know what day it is today.
But I do, I do.
I'm 40 years old today, Alan. 40.
I'm 44. It's all right, you know. You'll like it.
The years haven't been good to the Conways, Alan. I'm a failure as a writer and bitter about it, too. Hazel, married to a vulgar little bully and terrified of him. Robin with a wife he can't love and no sort of position or comfort or anything. And Carol, the happiest and kindest of us all, dead before she was 20.
And...
You're different somehow, Alan. I really believe you're happy, or contented at least.
I am, Kay.
Alan, have you ever had a strange feeling that something is happening to you a second time? You know it isn't, but it seems to be somehow.
Yes, of course.
I feel it now, here in this room. I felt it here before. I remember once a birthday party, my birthday. I was 21.
I remember, Kay. That would be in 1919, just after the war.
Yes, and Robin was just home, mustered out of the service. We were all here in this room. Mother was singing for us. I felt then that it had all happened before somehow. I can almost hear Mother's voice now. She was singing something of Schumann's, I think.
Well, now, let's have some tea and all be nice and cozy together. You children don't know what it means to me to have you all here again. The war over, both you boys safe and sound at home. And I think we can all begin to enjoy ourselves again. I'll pour out. Come on, Kay. Oh, what's the matter with her, Carol?
It's a mood.
Kay, what a funny child you are. And you 21 today. Smile, darling. There, that's better. Well, this is just like old times, isn't it? And we seem to have waited so long. I ought to tell fortunes again tonight.
Oh, yes, Mother, do.
No. Kay, really?
I'm sorry, Mother. Somehow I hated the idea of you messing about with the cards tonight. I never did like it much.
I believe only the bad things come true.
Certainly not, Carol. I always said that Robin and Alan had come back from France, now didn't I? I saw it every time in the cards. Because if Kay objects... Well, perhaps Kay would like to read some of the new novels she's writing.
I couldn't possibly, Mother.
I can't see why not. You always expect me to be ready to sing for you.
That's different.
Kay is always so solemn and secretive about her writing, as if she were ashamed of it.
I am, in a way. I know it's not nearly good enough yet. Most of it's... Stupid.
It isn't, Kay.
Yes, it is, Carol, darling, but it won't always be. It must come right if only I keep on trying, and then you'll see.
Is that what you want to do, Kay? Just write novels and things?
Yes, Robin, but there's nothing in simply writing. The point is to be good, to be sensitive and sincere. Hardly anybody's both, especially women who write. But I'm going to try and be. And whatever happens, I'm never, never going to write except what I want to write, what I feel is true to me deep down. I won't write just to please silly people or to make money or...
Go on, Kay.
No. Alan.
Mm-hmm.
I finished, really. Or if I was going to say any more, I've forgotten what it was. Nothing much.
Are you sure you're not overtired, Kay?
No, Mother, really.
Well, I wonder what'll have happened to Hazel when Kay's a famous novelist. Perhaps one of her majors and captains will come back for her soon.
And what about her brother Robin, the famous... Oh, famous something or other. You bet your life.
You don't know what you're going to do yet, Robin.
Well, give me a chance. I've only been out of the Air Force about 12 hours. But by jingo, I'm going to do something. And none of this starting at the bottom of the ladder, pushing a pen in a corner business either. This is a time when a young man gets a chance, and I'm going to take it. You watch. And don't be surprised if I'm in London before you, Kay. And making plenty of money. Probably more than Hazel will ever see.
Hazel will always have plenty of money.
Well, how do you know, Carol?
I just do. It came over me suddenly then.
Well, now. I thought I was the prophetic one of the family. I suppose it wouldn't be fair if I sent my rival to bed.
I should jolly well think it wouldn't. And I'll tell you another thing. Alan's the happy one.
Good old Alan.
I rather think you're wrong there, you know, Carol.
I'm not. I know.
No, I'm not going to have this. I'm the one who knows in this family. Now then, wait a minute. Yes, I can see Robin dashing about, making lots of money and becoming very important and helping some of you others. Yes, and a very devoted young wife by his side. Oh, and Hazel, of course, being very grand. Yes, and her husband is tall and quite good-looking. Nearly as good-looking as she thinks he is. I believe he comes into a title. Oh, then there's Carol. But, of course, Carol will be with me for years, yes.
I don't know about that. I haven't exactly decided what to do yet. There are so many things to do.
Carol, I think you could go on the stage.
Yes, I could, of course, and I've often thought of it. But I shouldn't want to be on the stage all the time, and when I wasn't playing a part, I'd like to be painting pictures. Just for myself, you know, daubing like mad, with lots and lots of the very brightest colors, tubes and tubes of vermilion and royal blue and emerald green, and then making all kinds of weird dresses for myself, and cooking.
No,
doing sausages and gingerbreads and pancakes, and sitting on the tops of mountains and going down rivers in canoes, and making friends with all sorts of people. And I'd share a flat or a little house with Kay in London, and Alan could come and stay with us and smoke his pipe, and we'd talk about books and laugh at ridiculous people and then go to foreign countries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, how are you going to begin to do all that, you ridiculous child?
Get it all in somehow. The point is to live. Never mind about money and positions and husbands with titles and rubbish. I'm going to live.
All right, darling. But wherever you were, all of you, and whatever you were doing, you'd all come back here sometimes, wouldn't you? But I'd come and see you, but you'd all come and see me too, all together. Perhaps with wives and husbands and lovely children of your own. Not being rich and famous or anything, but just being yourselves, as you are now. Enjoying our silly old jokes, sometimes playing the same silly old games. All one big happy family. Oh, I can see us all here again.
Don't!
That was 1919. Now it's 1938. And look at the Conways. I knew then, Alan. I knew then. It's hideous and unbearable. Remember what we once were and what we thought we'd be, and now this. And it's all we have, Alan. It's us. Every step we've taken, every tick of the clock making everything worse. If that's all life is, what's the use? Better to die like cattle before you find it out, before time gets to work on you. I've felt it before, Alan, but never as I have tonight. There's a great devil in the universe, and we call it time.
Kay, did you ever read Blake?
Yes.
Do you remember this? Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine. It is right it should be so. Man was made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, safely through the world we go.
Safely through the world we go. No, it isn't true, Alan, or it isn't true for me. If things are merely mixed, good and bad, it'd be all right, but they get worse. Time's beating us.
No, time's only a kind of dream, Kay. If it wasn't, it would have to destroy everything, the whole universe, and then remake it again every tenth of a second. But time doesn't destroy anything. It merely moves us on, in this life, from one peephole to the next.
But the happy young Conways who used to play charades here, they've gone, and gone forever.
No, they're real and existing, just as we two here now are real and existing. We're seeing another bit of the view, a bad bit if you like, but the whole landscape's still there.
But Alan, we can't be anything but what we are now.
It's hard to explain suddenly like this. There's a book I'll lend you. Read it in the train. But the point is, now at this moment, at any moment, we're only a cross-section of our real selves. What we really are is the whole stretch of ourselves, all our time. And when we come to the end of this life, all those selves, all our time, will be us, the real you, the real me. Then perhaps we'll find ourselves in another time, which is only another kind of dream.
I try to understand. As long as you really believe and think it possible for me to believe that time's not just ticking our lives away, wrecking and ruining everything forever.
It's all right, Kay. I'll get you that book. You know, I believe half our trouble now is because we think time's ticking our lives away. That's why we snatch and grab and hurt each other.
As if we were in a panic on a sinking ship.
Yes, like that.
But you don't do those things, bless you.
I think it's easier not to, if you take a long view.
As if we were immortal beings.
Yes, and in for a tremendous adventure.
And the headline attraction at the more top hat supper clubs of Paris and New York. Currently, she is engaged at Le Rubin Bleu here in town, and she will make her first American concert appearance at the Gill Theater shortly. Her first song, a folk chant of northern Brazil, the Amazon country, is called... What is it called, Senora?
All You Stop.
Meaning?
I will sing it for you first, Mr. Valle, and then you will see me if you can... you will tell me if you can understand what it means. No?
But yes, Senora.
So here it is, All You Stop. All you stop, tana, locatana, 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 grubby goy. All you stop, tana, locatana, 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 grubby goy. Tarapatakarapatira, manumbu, você tem o dedo cru, mas em mim você não dá. É de obra com ele, tem de acabar, é pego, pido pelo serenço, pelo cubá. All you stop, tana, locatana, 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 grubby goy. All you stop, tana, locatana, 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 grubby goy.
Ay, que linda.
Now, Mr. Valle, you tell me, what does it mean?
You want me to guess?
If you can, yes. Yeah.
Well, I should say that it's a song about a beautiful South American girl who is very angry with her boyfriend. She says, beat it, sap, we're all washed up.
You're very wrong, Mr. Valle. It's a song about a frog. And the song is saying, or you stop, tana toka, tana loka, which means, look at the frog. He's in his hole, he's in his home, he's in his home, he's in his hole, and I'll bet he wants to fight somebody.
That just goes to show how wrong one can be. Miss Houston's next is a magic or voodoo song. It is addressed to a deity known as Eshu. Who is Eshu, Senor?
Eshu is the devil, Mr. Valle. It is necessary to keep Eshu away by singing this song. Oh, Ishkadi, Anthony Mataka. Oh, Ishkadi, Anthony Mataka. Catirano, pau, atirando. Mato minha catira, atirando. Eu tenho chumbo pra chumba. Viado no mato pra caça. Engana a Maria pra samba. Eu faço no mexa com a nhanha. Que temor um bamba pra sova. O meu sambini diz, é urso. A cabeça do santo é urso. Os cabelos do santo é urso. Os olhos do santo é urso. A boca do santo é urso. Os braços do santo é urso. A perna do santo é urso. Quá, 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 é urso. Quá, 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 é urso. Oh, cadê Antônio Botoca? Oh, cadê Antônio Botoca? Manguará no copo pra chamba. Veneno de cobra pra cura. Maria da Jori pra inventa. Meu sobrinho de super dua. Meu santo no mexa com a nhanha. Que tem murumbamba pra soa. O meu sobrinho de é urso. A cabeça do santo é urso. Os cabelos do santo é urso. Os olhos do santo é urso. A boca do santo é urso. Os braços do santo é urso. As pernas do santo é urso. Quá, 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 é urso.
Next, 60 seconds worth of timely information.
When you're serving a gelatin dessert to your family, you naturally want to know all about the particular brand you're serving. Well, there's a simple, easy test that will tell you a great deal. As you add the hot water to your gelatin dessert, smell the rising vapor. You'll be amazed at the result. For you see, there's a great difference in gelatin desserts. They can have the delightful aroma of fresh, rich fruit, or they can have a very unpleasant odor. If you make this test with royal gelatin, you'll notice it has a marvelous aroma of fresh fruit. There's never any disagreeable odor. For example, royal strawberry gelatin smells like juicy, luscious strawberries. And no wonder, because this delicious dessert is made with the flavor of prized Klondike strawberries. 30 to 40 of them to every single package, never with artificial flavorings. What's more, this finer strawberry flavor is blended with pure, wholesome, grade A gelatin. No wonder it smells like fresh fruit and tastes like fresh fruit. Try Royal Strawberry Gelatin and try the other delicious Royal Gelatin flavors, all made with the flavor of real fruit, real raspberries and cherries, real lemons, oranges, limes, and pineapples. Try them. Buy 3 packages of Royal Gelatin tomorrow. Also from Sweet Music, Fare Thee Well, Annabelle. I would like to have a little information. Have you seen Annabelle? I expected her to meet me at the station.
I don't know Annabelle.
She's a girl with a dashing way. She is dressed very smart and gay.
Would you mind introducing me? What a time we'd have in my cabriolet.
Listen, ladies, to my soulful intonation. Paging Miss Annabelle. You will be followed by a lovely aggregation when they ring that engine bell.
Take me with you. No, me, no, me, no, me, 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 me.
Pardon me, sir, but what is your destination?
Just a nice padded cell.
I expected him to meet me at the station. Come along, Lulu Bell. Oh, if he doesn't come, I'll die of aggravation.
Now, just be calm, Miss Annabelle. Do you think his leaving me flat?
Honey, my man did me like that. He took my money and my jewelry, too. I hate to say it, but I still love that rat.
Can it be he telephoned the cancellation?
Now, don't give up, Miss Annabelle. Why, maybe he's been on a little celebration, and he's stewed in some hotel.
Goodness, I'm a mess, and I need another dress.
I can fix you up right well.
Oh, where is the cause of all my agitation?
Now, step this way, Miss Annabelle.
Annabelle, over the river and cheerio, my dear, here's where my journey starts. There's a teardrop glistening in your heart of hearts. Over the river and here I go, my dear, stifle your sobs and moans. Can't you hear that whistling by Mr. Casey Jones? There's a locomotive puffing at the station. Fare thee well, Annabelle. And I know you need a little consolation. Don't pretend, I can tell. When you feel that you're out in the rain, think of me in that Pullman train. On a cold observation car, looking for you in the dark, all in vain. I will send a telegram at every station. Fare thee well, Annabelle. And if your family wants a bit of information, say that I'm doing swell. And when I come back with a pocket full of jack, you'll have something grand to tell. Cause I'll take you on a honeymoon vacation. Fare thee well, Annabelle.
We are going on a honeymoon vacation.
Fare thee well, Annabelle.
Don't you think we make a dandy combination?
Fare thee well, Annabelle.
Buy some fish, Lulu Bell, for the cat.
Honey lamb, I'll tend to that.
You better wise up the cat of yours, that she's moving soon to our little flat.
How my folks would love this little celebration.
Yes, they would. Hope to tell.
All your folks will start collapsing around the station when they hear that choo-choo bell.
But I just don't care, because it isn't their fair.
Say, I hear that brakeman yell. So be good and cut out all your dissipation.
Fare well,
One of the most pleasant of the many pleasurable things that happened to us in London last spring was our meeting with J.B. Priestley, famous English novelist and playwright, author of The Good Companions and Angel Pavement, among a great many other novels, Tonight's Time and the Conways, among a great many other plays. He was the author also of a most sensible commentary on the coronation, broadcast by this program May 7th last. As those of you who have read his recent book, Midnight on the Desert, no, Mr. Priestley has for some years been much occupied with the idea of time with a capital T.
According to him, there's a great deal more to time than the most expensive stopwatch can tell you or me. And he has convinced us, somewhat against our will, that you will be interested in trying to take time apart, so to speak, with him. May we present J.B. Priestley. Our time is his time now. Mr. Priestley, I suppose the beginning of a new year does offer a good excuse for talking about time, but speaking frankly for myself, and I'm sure for a great many listeners, I just don't know what all the shooting's about. Why worry about time so much?
A great many thoughtful people have worried about time, Mr. Valley, especially in the past few years. This is an age of exciting discoveries, but easily the most exciting of them all deal with the problem of time. Very soon, we may find that we're living in quite a different universe from the one we've formerly imagined. Man's whole destiny may be seen in a new light, and all because time is not what we thought it was.
Well, then, what is time?
Suppose you try to answer that one yourself, Mr. Valley. You tell us, what is time?
Time is... Well, time is time. It's a measure.
A measure of what?
A measure of... Well, a measure of life, I suppose.
That comes close to the generally accepted notion, yes. But suppose we imagine that our life is like a railway journey.
Yes.
Now, according to the ordinary conception of time, everything that the train has left behind no longer exists, and nothing down the line in front of the train exists either. We call the line behind the train the past, and the part of the journey that lies in front of us, the future. Now, according to the new theory of time, in which I believe, the whole railway line exists continuously, and we are merely being moved along it. That, if you'll pardon me, is what my play, Time and the Conways, tries to say. Time doesn't destroy anything, it merely moves us further along.
Then you believe that the past still exists?
Yes, I believe everything is still there in its own place along the time track. The Egyptians are still building the pyramids, Julius Caesar is still landing in Britain, and Columbus is still discovering America.
And I am still at Yale, flunking mathematics, through all eternity.
Yes, but bearing up under it very well indeed. Just think, Mr. Valley, if this new theory is correct, everything man has created, even the main Stein song, is still in existence, and when we come to the end of man's time in the world's history will merely come to an end as a story comes to an end. But everything that man has done will still be there. The story will be finished, but there, a reality.
But I wonder, Mr. Priestley, if there is any actual, practical, factual evidence to support your theory of time as existing continuously.
Enough to satisfy an ordinary sensible Yorkshireman like myself, Mr. Valley. Obviously, this is neither the occasion nor the place to go into a certain accepted conclusions in higher mathematics regarding the existence of some fourth dimension. But people do actually see and experience the distant past. I've met them, and so have you. Most of us know instances of it. These people are given a certain freedom of movement along the fourth dimension, and this goes forward as well as backward. Some people, as we all know, see the future. And I personally believe that a great deal of what is called gambler's luck or the playing of hunches is an unrecognized ability of this kind.
As it happens, we had a remarkable hunch here last week, Mr. Priestley. We predicted the correct score of the Rose Bowl football game, California 13, Alabama nothing, 2 days in advance.
Did you bet on it?
No, all those telegrams from down south reached me too late.
Pity. Great pity. But what you experience, Mr. Valley, may have been a little freedom of movement of your New Haven nurtured mind along the fourth dimension. Just as, in my play, the girl Kay, during her 21st birthday party in 1919, has a sudden vision of what will be happening to her family in 1938.
What was the book mentioned in the play, Mr. Priestley?
Experiment with Time by J.W. Dunn, which is to me easily the most fascinating and probably the most valuable book of our day. Incidentally, If the theory of time put forward by Dunn is true, as I believe it to be, that part of us which occasionally sees the future frequently shows us the future in our dreams. I hesitate to mention that because dreams are so tangled up with all sorts of superstition. And Dunn is anything but superstitious.
What sort of a man is he?
He was a hard-headed aeronautical engineer who brought a good original mathematical mind to these problems. And he ends his book by assuring us both of immortality and the existence of God.
Now that, Mr. Priestley, does sound tremendously important.
I regard it not only as important, but extremely urgent, Mr. Valley. And for this reason, the world is in a very dangerous condition, going round in a vicious circle of pessimism, hate and violence, so that what we urgently need is a change of mind and heart. Men have got to feel at home in the universe again. And I believe a great deal of the despair of our time is due to the fact that men have a false picture of the universe and of our destiny. Having lost religion and gained nothing in its place, too many people have come to believe that life doesn't amount to much. But actually, as Kay and Alan say in my play, we are immortal beings engaged in a tremendous adventure. These new theories of time link up with some very old pieces of wisdom, such as the kingdom of heaven is within us. If, as I believe, we live on after death as our fourth dimension selves, then we establish ourselves establish the conditions and the quality of that future life. The heaven or hell waiting for us is of our own making. If time were really ticking our lives away, it might not matter how we lived. But time is not ticking our lives away, and therefore it matters enormously and urgently how we live, just because we are really outside of time and because we are immortal beings. Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Make it a lifetime. Let's make it a lifetime and live it for all it's worth. We'll reach up into the clouds, bring heaven on earth. Let's take every heartbeat between you and me and weave them into a dream of reality. Let's make it a lifetime and not just a holiday. True love comes but only once, so we'll let it stay. We'll live each moment deep in love songs, one for each star up above. Let's make it a lifetime of having disposed of time for the time being, we are confronted by another mystery, the strange case of Tommy Riggs, free, white, and 20-something, and Betty Lou Barry, aged 6 to 8, who are one and the same person. Our new Canadian friends should know that Tommy and Betty have been with us now for 22 weeks, and that Tommy does both his own voice and the voice of lovable little Betty Lou. A demonstration follows at once.
Bang! Boom! He almost got away. Bang!
Betty Lou, what are you doing?
I'm playing cowboy and Indian. Bang, bang.
Oh, I see. You're shooting at the Indian.
Yeah, no, I'm shooting at the cowboys. Boom.
Oh, at the cowboys? Oh, then you're an Indian.
Yes, and a wild one, too. Woo-woo.
But Betty Lou, most little girls who play this game prefer to be cowboys. What do you get out of being an Indian?
A chance to holler louder. Woo-woo.
Well, what makes you think that Indians holler louder than cowboys?
Mr. Valley says they do.
Well, what does Mr. Valley know about Indians?
Oh, he knows almost as much as my granddaddy. He used to be an old Indian fighter.
Who, Mr. Valley?
No, my granddaddy. He was chased by Indians once.
He was?
Yes, on a horse.
Well, who was on the horse?
My granddaddy with one spur.
With one spur? Who told you that?
Who told me what, Mr. Tommy?
Now, your granddaddy was on a horse with one spur.
Oh, were you there, too?
No, Betty Lou, I wasn't there. You just said your granddaddy was on a horse with one spur. And when people wear spurs, well, they usually wear two spurs.
But my granddaddy doesn't... He doesn't ever need two spurs.
Doesn't he? Well, why doesn't he?
Because.
Because why?
Because my granddaddy said if he got one side of the horse going, the other side would go along, too.
Oh, I see.
And that isn't all either that happened to my granddaddy.
No?
No. You know, the Indians were chasing my granddaddy all the time and everything, don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you know what my granddaddy told me?
No, what did he tell you, Betty Lou?
He told me that one day the Indians chased him across the field and down into a big hole in the ground.
Well, well.
And the Indians were all around him, too.
Well, he was in a predicament, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, he was in a hole, Mr. Tommy.
Well, that's what I mean. But Betty Lou, what was he doing in the hole?
Oh, he was yelling like everything, too.
Well, what was he yelling for?
Because I guess he didn't like the wildcat that was in the hole with him.
Well, that certainly was very thrilling. But what in the world happened to your granddaddy?
Oh, he's all right, Mr. Tommy.
Well, I know he's all right now, Betty Lou, but how did he get out of the hole?
Oh, he climbed out real fast, too.
I have no doubt. But tell me, what did he do about the Indians?
Well, my granddaddy said he fought 251 Indians with one hand.
With one hand? Well, why didn't he use both hands, Betty Lou?
He was using both hands, Mr. Tommy.
Well, you just said he fought 251 Indians with one hand. What was he doing with the other hand?
He was trying to get it out of the wildcat's mouth.
Oh, dimmy. Oh, what an experience. Well, was he captured?
Oh, no, he wasn't captured. They tied him to a tree.
Well, I should say that things looked pretty bad for your granddaddy about that time, Betty Lou.
I think so, too.
Well, what did the Indians do next?
Well, a great big Indian looked at granddaddy and said, ugh. And then all the rest of the Indians looked at him and said, ugh, ugh.
Ugh, ugh.
Yes, ugh, ugh.
Well, what did that mean?
Well, that meant that they were going to hit my granddaddy on the head with a tomahawk, but they didn't.
Why not?
Why not? Mr. Tommy, don't you like my granddaddy?
Of course I like your granddaddy, Betty Lou. I simply want to know the reason why they didn't hit him on the head with a tomahawk.
Because a beautiful Indian princess threw her arms around my granddaddy's neck and saved him.
Oh, romance.
What did you say?
Well, Betty Lou, this story sounds very much like the story of Captain John Smith and Pocahontas. By any chance, did your granddaddy mention that a beautiful romance developed?
Oh, yes, he did. How did you know?
Well, I just surmised it.
Well, my granddaddy said an awful beautiful romance developed. And how did he develop it, Mr. Tommy?
Well, I don't know, Betty Lou. I imagine it started in the usual way. Romances, well, customarily start out with, well, I just don't know how to tell you, honey.
Well, for instance...
Well, for instance, what's the first thing your mother gives you when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, is that what the beautiful Indian princess gave granddaddy?
Probably. It usually is.
Well, I don't see how he could develop a romance out of that.
Why, of course he could, Betty Lou. Now, tell me, what is the first thing your mother gives you when you wake up in the morning? A great big what?
a great big spoonful of cod liver oil, so there, too.
Here's news you won't want to miss. This week, your grocer asks you to try one of the most delicious and popular desserts in his store, Royal Strawberry Gelatin. Strawberry is one of America's favorite flavors, and in Royal Strawberry Gelatin, you get real strawberry flavor. Flavor made from choice, luscious Klondike strawberries, juicy, delicious berries that are the very pick of the crop. What's more, Royal uses plenty of these finer strawberries for the flavor of every single package of Royal Strawberry Gelatin. Yes, every package of this marvelous dessert contains the flavor of 30 to 40 real strawberries. No artificial flavorings are ever used. And the gelatin itself is better, too. Pure, wholesome, and extra quick setting. Finer flavor, finer gelatin. And so when you're making your gelatin and add hot water, you get only the true natural aroma of fresh strawberries, never any unpleasant odor. Yet Royal Gelatin is very economical. Only a few cents for a package large enough to serve 4 to 6 people. Follow your grocer's suggestion. Serve delicious, tempting Royal Strawberry Gelatin tomorrow. And be sure you insist on this particular kind of strawberry gelatin, the kind that's made with the flavor of real strawberries, never with any artificial flavors. Royal Strawberry Gelatin, R-O-Y-A-L. Buy 3 packages from your grocer tomorrow.
Over the rails, let's go, men. We're leaving tonight again. Hollywood's light and gay moon. We're gonna be there and soon. Hello to the west. Goodbye to the rest. Sally and Sue, don't be blue. We'll just be gone for weeks and weeks and then. We're leaving tonight again. Hollywood's light and gay moon. We're gonna be there as soon. Hello to the west.
We're off tonight for Hollywood and a new picture. And so next week's show, headed by Ralph Bellamy and June Knight, will reach you from the opposite coast. Julie Valley bidding you all good night. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.